Grow old with me. The best is yet to be. In the 17th century, François Duc de La Rochefoucauld wrote, "Few people know how to be old." He might have added, "Few people want to be old." This then raises a question. If we do not know how to be old and don't want to be old, then isn't staying young a normal process of life itself?
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, age of Aquarius, Aquarius, Aquarius.
Second Sunday, the NBC News award-winning radio series presents You're Only Young Twice, The Youth Syndrome. Now here is your host, Murray the K.
Ours is a youth-oriented culture. We have been told this often enough on radio and television by the slick magazines and the new mode movies, often enough to believe it. The American way of life no longer is mom's apple pie and a down payment on a new car. It's a romance that lasts forever, the beauty of eternal youth, and an economic system whose banner is a bikini rampant on a field of flesh. What has this national preoccupation with the adoration of the perpetual swinger done to those no longer youthful? What, by way of inquiry, is the chronological age of America today? We began our look into the state of the mature when John Dancy, NBC News, talked to Dr. Philip Hauser, professor of sociology and director of the University of Chicago's prestigious Population Research Center.
Dr. Hauser, what is happening to the population of the United States in terms of age?
It was never true, as has often been stated, that more than half the population was under 25 years of age. This has not been true in the United States for many decades, though I might point out that the average age of people in the United States in 1800 was around 16 years. It went up to over 30 by 1950, and then after the post-war baby boom, went down to level in round numbers of around 26. It is now on its way up again and is a little above 27. But I think the significant thing is that there will be little change in the median age for some years ahead, and that it's likely to stay within a level of about 27, 28 years.
The good professor's statistics may shatter some, especially our youth, who take it for granted that numerically America belongs to them. It does not. Who, then, is responsible for the implication that this is a land only of the young? Is it that Machiavellian demon, the omnipotent advertising agency, collectively known as Madison Avenue? Leonard Probst of NBC walked into the elegant yet simple offices of David Ogilvy, the urbane and literate head of one of the world's largest advertising corporations, Ogilvy and Mather, and bearded, so to speak, Madison Avenue on its own street.
Mr. Ogilvy, in our culture, in the American culture, it's almost shabby and vulgar to be old, and it's wonderful to be young. How much of that is due to advertising?
I wish I could tell you that I think all of it's due to advertising. I think it's a wonderful thing, but I don't think it's due to advertising at all. It's due to far more fundamental factors in our culture.
In your advertising, in the advertising we see on television, we hear on radio, and we read in newspapers and magazines, one gets the feeling the word old has been sent to the graveyard and is not used.
Good. Why should it be used? We are human beings, and some of us are old at 20, and some of us are young at 90. And Titian was painting great masterpieces when he was 99. Lovely idea.
Well, when one sees 80-year-old women in miniskirts and heavily covered with cosmetics, isn't that in part due to advertising?
Perhaps it is. Perhaps Clairol told old ladies with dirty gray hair that it doesn't have to be that. And why not? I think that's fine. If I were an old lady, I'd probably do it myself and enjoy life more than if I was like Whistler's mother, an old white-haired thing in a mob cap sitting by the fire feeling miserable and dreaming about the past and not living in the present.
By looking at advertising, do you feel that it gives an unbalanced, untrue picture in the sense that it is more focused on youth than on a balanced view of the society, that what is young is good and what is old is to be forgotten?
You very seldom see old people in television advertising or in magazine or newspaper advertising. That's perfectly true. And by excluding them, are you giving the impression that old people are undesirable? I don't think so. You're just showing young people. I don't think that you're automatically saying that old people are for the birds. And that the breakdown in respect for the old and filial piety is due to factors which I think have nothing to do with advertising.
Without making any assessment of whom has coated America once over lightly with perpetual youth, the fact is clear that those of us in our 40s, 50s, and 60s are as different from the mature of yesterday as the young are different from their counterpart a generation ago. We act differently, look differently, dress differently. Perky and ubiquitous Barbara Walters of the Today Show took up the question of chic clothing for the older woman with Pauline Trigier, a designer who has won international fame for giving the mature woman a slick new way of dressing.
Miss Trigier, how can the more mature woman, the older woman, look with it, look chic, dress stylishly, and not look as if she's trying to copy a teenager?
I don't think that's so difficult. I think the more, I always repeat the same thing. I may sound like an old machine, but the first thing that one has to have is a three-way mirror, you know, and be very objective about it. Look at yourself, front, back, side view, and then, I mean, you must be pleased about what you see.
As I look at you, I think you do not color your hair. The natural gray shows through. A lot of women would feel that as they became a little older, they should dye their hair. How do you feel about that?
Well, actually, it's not gray. It's really a blonde streak. And when the gray will come, I will accept it, because why not?
What would your general advice be for the woman over 35?
Oh, 35 is terribly young, Miss Walters. I mean, let's
I
go
think so,
for,
too. But that's,
I mean, 35 is
let's
a terribly...
Say, what should we say, 45?
Certainly.
Even that's young.
Even that young. It wasn't young when I was young, but it's certainly young today. I think the first thing, she should keep her figure watching. You don't have to be a size 8 or a 10 or a 12, but you should just keep trim and not let bulge show through.
How do you feel about hemlines, Miss Trigier?
I think they should be just above the knee, 2 inches, 2.5 inches, if the legs is good. If the legs is no good, by all means, try to cover it.
Pauline Trigier, what do you think is wrong with the way the average over 40 woman dresses today, or do you think that the most dress very well?
No, I don't think that most dress very well. I think that the youth idea is misinterpreted by those women. It begins with the hair, which is probably too blonde and too bouffant, and then with too pastely things and really too tight. I think that the mistake that women over 45 do when they gain a little bit of weight is to put a corset or some kind of a bra that's too tight, so the flesh starts coming out and then you see it through the dress, and that's another one of those great mistakes that should be avoided.
That same new form, a blend of lightness and color, has jogged the dress pattern of the traditionally conservative older male. Edwin Newman, NBC's critic at large, talked about the new era of men's fashion with the noted man's clothing designer, Arnold Bly.
You manufacture what, exactly?
We manufacture knitted suits, knitted shirts, sweaters, jackets, all made out of Europe and in Spain. And we also manufacture leathers, leather coats, leather vests, leather pants.
Is this a growing market?
Yes, this market is growing tremendously because the older man is now starting to more and more accept this type of item.
And is the use of jewelry for men spreading also?
Oh, yes. The jewelry industry has had tremendous growth because men are wearing cufflinks today, whereas before they used to wear nothing but button cuff shirts. Today, 90% of the industry is manufacturing nothing but French cuff shirts.
Mr. Blind, does all this kind of thing go with sideburns and the new hairstyles for men, would you say?
I think so. I think that the older man is wanting to express himself more. He wants to feel that he's not left behind. He's as equally as fashionable as his young son is.
If beauty, in truth, is only skin deep, few corporations in the nail-scratching, competitive world of cosmetics know more about beautifying the skin than Helena Rubinstein. Mala Rubinstein, now the active head of the firm, looked at beauty aids for the older woman with a slightly dubious Bill Ryan of NBC News.
How much of a desire for youth is there?
There is great and eternal desire for youth at all times.
How much of a contribution, then, does the cosmetic industry make to this craving, if we can call it that?
Well, the cosmetic industry has and is doing tremendous contribution to it, because we know very well that there are so many elements in our life now that require care.
Where is the line between a cosmetic that helps and a cosmetic that just pretties one up a little bit?
They are both. You know, they are cosmetics that help because they actually work, you know, on the skin. But we know very well that beauty is also a question of spirit. When a woman knows that she looks well, that she's attractive, she acts more attractively too.
Couldn't she feel as attractive being scrubbed without being painted?
I think it's a question I should ask you to answer. I bet that if you stay in front of a very attractive woman, that it's done beautifully, maybe not overdone, but just done to the point where it accentuates her own personality, her own characteristics, without distorting it. I'm sure you'll find that she looks much, much more attractive. And therefore, all these little gadgets and gears, just like clothes, add greatly to beauty of a woman.
You know you've got me, and you're not going to let go, are you? You're really pushing me into a corner. I'm trying to be fair on this. How much advantage do the cosmetic people take of older persons' cravings for youth?
As much as women want it. But, you know, some people are satisfied with one or two or three products. But some women just love to be pampered. And if this pampering helps them, I really feel they should do it. It's good for them.
Women not only search for youth at the cosmetic counter, but they flock eagerly and sometimes pathetically to a new gimmick on the American scene, the Total Look Salon, or the Beauty Farm, that elaborate replacement for yesterday's cozy little beauty parlor. In Los Angeles, where anything that looks over 21 is an anathema, Jess Marlowe of NBC visited a salon called The Sanctuary and talked to Anne Marie Benstrom, the manager.
We are so terribly youth-oriented, and particularly in an area where the outer beauty is so vital to the survival standards of living of people, you can't really afford to get old, can you? I think really that the eternal truth will prevail. And in life, activity is life itself, and increasing the activity means more life. If you increase the activity, if you find a well-balanced diet and decrease the food intake, there is no way. No one is going to not be healthy. It's got to be, because it's the law of cause and effect. And I feel that the people who come here, they sort of realize this. They get hooked on it. You know, it's a very, very contagious sort of a thing.
What kind of a woman seeks a return to youth at a beauty farm? The question was posed by Jess Marlowe to a client of the Sanctuary.
What brings you to the Sanctuary?
I don't want to grow old gracefully. I don't want to grow old. I want to stay young as long as I can. I live in a city where the greatest commodity on the market is youth. We're running to buy it wherever we can, and there's a great deal of importance attached to it. I can't go anywhere in this city without seeing at least 10 very lovely young things sitting all around me, and I have to compete.
Do you require youth in your husband?
No, not at all. Isn't that funny? It doesn't bother me at all. He could put on 25 pounds, and I don't think I would mind. He's lost most of his hair. He wears very thick glasses now. Can't see that far without them. And it doesn't bother me at all. But, of course, I married him because he was the super intellectual. I was looking for a very different thing, I guess, in him.
The Complete Treatment Center is not, in this dying decade, the exclusive beauty province of women. I talked to Mr. D, who operates a Manhattan center designed to give older males a young and pampered look in a place called The Complete Man.
We're trying to make the men themselves feel wanted in today's youth market. We give them hair. We style the hair that they have. We advise them on the type of clothes to wear. We make them lose a little weight. What we do, we actually make them the complete man.
What would you say is the greatest motivation of your particular clientele? Do they really want to be young? Do they have a particular motivation for coming here?
Well, sure, I believe everyone wants to look young. No one actually wants to get old. But what they would like to really do is look their age. Instead of losing their hair and being fat and being 40 and looking 55, they'd really like to look 40 or in the 39, 40 area.
Girls come to beauty parlors because and want to stay young. There's a sex motivation there, you know, to be attractive, to be wanted and be desired. When the man comes in, isn't that as much a motivation as a woman going to a beauty parlor?
True, it is motivation, but we also have to understand the way the population is going. 25% of the people in our country is young, and people actually do not want that separation of them being old. No matter what your age, they want to belong, and this is what it's all about.
What about the older man who comes to you, who may have a young mistress, or maybe even a young wife? Maybe she has a young mistress, he has a young mistress and a young wife. Can you spot that? I mean,
yes, but if he has a young mistress and a young wife, actually, we shouldn't be helping him. He should be helping us. what it's all about, again, he wants to look good walking on the street with her. I mean, rather than have the father image, he actually wants to look like both of them are together, that there's not this big age separation.
Ponce de Leon battled the untamed swamps of Florida, searching for a fabled fountain of youth. Today's affluent may not be able to find such a fountain, but they can look as if they found something almost as good through plastic surgery. With amazing skill, surgeons can peel years from a haggard, wrinkled face. Dean Mill of NBC News talked about such surgery with two distinguished plastic surgeons. Now, for professional reasons, they are referred to as Doctors X and Y.
What type of person comes to a plastic surgeon for cosmetic surgery?
The average person who comes to the plastic surgeon for cosmetic surgery, by and large, would be the female over the age of 40 for the facelift, and then the younger female from the teens on upward. And the smaller percentage of people would be men seeking the same type of surgery. But by and large, the average plastic surgeon's practice is mostly the female.
Is it possible for plastic surgery to freeze a person's looks to a perpetually youthful appearance?
No, it is not. One cannot turn back the passing of time, and time has its effect on every tissue of the human body, including the face, including the skin of the face. And even though you may have a facelift done at the age of 40 plus one, the skin is still aging from 40 plus one right on up. The elastic fibers of the skin deteriorate. The skin tone deteriorates. Its blood supply very, very slowly changes. So that all one does is to remove the aging skin for the time being, but the remaining skin continues to suffer the advancing years. So that plastic surgery on the facelift case is never, never permanent.
In your experience, do patients who have had their faces lifted, are they invariably pleased with the result?
The honest answer, of course, is that we wish our patients had been pleased with the results to the point of being happy with it. This is the mark of a successful operation, not a technically correct operation with finely healed scars. If the patient doesn't achieve the image that they had sought, then the operation to that degree is a failure.
In your experience, how serious are your patients about getting plastic surgery done on their face?
I say that a great many people, I would say that today, a tremendous number of women discuss facelifting and discuss improvement of their faces in a light fashion. They think of it as being something that might easily be done almost with magic mirrors. But when they come down to doing it, the number of those who are willing to submit to what may very easily be termed savage surgery on their one and only image are relatively few.
How much does facelift surgery cost?
The average cost just for the facelift should be in the neighborhood of $1,000 and up.
What kind of a person seeks facial rejuvenation? Why? Dean Mell talked to an amazingly spry and lovely woman, whom we will not identify by name, who has undergone facelift surgery.
Madam, why did you have facelift surgery?
Well, for a number of years, I hadn't liked the appearance of my face, especially when I got up in the morning. I was getting older, too, and my feminine vanity played a role, of course. And also, I work, and we live in a youth-oriented society, and people feel about themselves, too, as if they're not accepted too well in our society. And all of this contributed to my decision.
Have you been totally satisfied with the results of your plastic surgery?
Oh, very satisfied.
What was the reaction of your friends?
This is very interesting. But because I had such a good surgeon, my friends just thought I looked well. I had gone on vacation after the surgery, and so I had been away over the summer, most of it. And when they saw me again after vacation, they all remarked that I looked positively wonderful. I must have had a great vacation.
Did any of them know previously that you had planned facial surgery?
Just a few.
But the ones who did not know
had no idea. Now, this, of course, is the criterion for good plastic surgery. To know a person has had plastic surgery is not the best criterion. To know that they look wonderful, you know, great vacation or whatever.
I can certainly testify, ma'am, sitting across this microphone from you, that certainly there are no scars apparent, nothing at all your appearance that would give me any indication whatsoever that you had undergone facelift surgery. You do have a very healthy, vibrant appearance.
Thank you.
At the risk of sounding terribly gauche, may I ask how old you are?
Of course, it's not gauche at all. I think it's very much in keeping with what you're doing. I'm 67 years old.
Patrick McGrady is an author who literally traveled the world looking for an answer to the question, has anyone discovered a nostrum that will restore the color of youth to the dullness of age, the vigor of a teenager to a 70-year-old body? He put down his findings in a fascinating book called The Youth Doctors. Jim Harriet of NBC News talked about the quacks and scientists with McGrady.
A person of means who's beginning to age around the edges, could you outline a program that might be suggested by your so-called youth doctors to make them look younger and perhaps a price tag for this?
Well, I think any youth doctor with his wits about him would certainly suggest the obvious things, which are to keep one's weight down. This is very important. Exercise is important. Sleep is important. And beyond that, it's really very much speculation as to what can keep you living longer and feeling younger. They might prescribe the cells of unborn lambs injected into the buttocks. They might prescribe procaine injections. They might prescribe proteolytic and lipolytic enzymes to be taken orally. They might prescribe aromatics, various perfumes to be used in soaps or shaving lotions and so forth, which create certain physiological effects, which can make a man more amorous or make him sleep better, this kind of thing. Really, there's no end to what has been prescribed for keeping people feeling younger.
When people say they want to look and feel younger, are they really saying they want to be sexually more active than perhaps they are at the age they present?
Not necessarily sexually more active, although this is probably the man's big complaint. A woman doesn't want to be sexually active, but she wants to be sexually attractive.
There are some new techniques. Could you mention some of the brand new ones, perhaps just being tried to turn back the body's clock, as you might put it?
Well, Alex Comfort in London is trying out a gamut of things to see if he can get an effect on people within 6 months. He's not a practitioner in the freakish sense of the word, and there are many of those. But Alex is trying out some vasodilatory agents, things which relax your blood vessels and make the blood go faster. He's trying some antidepressants. He's trying dietary restriction to see if really we can measure an increase in youthfulness or in vigor and a decrease in the unhappy functions of age over a six-month period.
Americans have been called a pill society. Is this part of the quest for youth? Do you think it's tied in with this?
It is very much tied in with it because, as I said, there's some obvious things you can do to slow down aging. You can lose weight, you can get exercise, you can stop drinking, you can stop smoking. People don't want the obvious things. They want these highly esoteric pills and injections, which are far more dubious. And the other things are almost surefire, and yet people want the easy answer in a pill.
What is the most elaborate job of, for want of a better term, I guess, rejuvenation you've ever heard about?
The most elaborate job I've heard of in rejuvenation is a con job perpetrated by an unscrupulous Estonian youth doctor who sold what he alleged to be the sex glands of castrated monks on the Riviera to aging people in this country for $25,000 a pair.
Can the aging process be halted or reversed? Jim Harriet discussed scientific research to conquer aging with Dr. Victor Selmanowicz, working with Dr. Norman Ehrentreich in the area of experimental gerontology.
Is it man's destiny to age?
Many experimental gerontologists today are of the opinion that the maximum lifespan of man will eventually be extended well beyond anything that most people conceive of today. We're working on the theory that there may be extracellular factors that are cumulative in the circulation with aging and play a role in the degenerative changes we see in the aging process. There has been work that seems to suggest that there is something in the milieu, something in the fluid that bathes the cells that does accumulate with aging and contributes to the aging process.
Then the next step would seem to be, or at least what you seem to be aiming at, is the ultimately finding what this factor is, or factors, isolating it, and either removing it or changing it in hopes of changing what it does to the cell.
Right. Up until now, medicine has concerned itself largely with preventing certain diseases and correcting them when they occur. But what we're talking about now is intervention on the part of the experimental gerontologists to alter the lifespan of the human being.
Testosterone is a male hormone either extracted from a bull or manufactured synthetically. It reputedly is a restorative for masculine virility. Gail Hartman, who looks more like a chic, charming blonde model than a registered nurse, works in a Long Island clinic which treats older men with testosterone. She talked about her work.
All we do is inject intramuscularly 1 cc of testosterone once a week, usually, for a period of a couple of months. Sometimes as many as 6 months, sometimes as few as 3 months. And then usually the body seems to take over itself, and it works pretty much on its own after that. Usually what I find a lot of it is, to be honest with you, is a psychological block. And once you sit him down and you talk to him and you go through these shots for a number of months, the psychological block passes. He thinks the shots are helping, which they do. They do, but a lot of it is, let's face it, psychological too. And eventually he comes to the realization that things aren't as bad as he thought, and he does very well. Sexually, of course. I'll sit there and talk to him and build up his ego. Sometimes I'll get his wife aside, and I'll talk to her. Because I find that's very important, because I think a woman has more control over a man's virility than anything else. He needs something psychological to build up his ego, and I think his wife can do the greatest thing for him, really.
The corporate image has not escaped our youth outlook. William Rukeyser, an associate editor at Fortune magazine, recently toured the United States doing extensive research into youth and the company. He talked about this with Edwin Newman.
Are there many more young executives these days, many more young directors in business?
Yes, there are. It's not necessarily because companies want to appear with it, though, or to learn the words to Beatles songs. There's a tremendous increase in the need for managers. And this means that there have to be a lot more young people hired by business because they just don't exist in any other age group.
Does this express itself also in people who are beyond the age of 40 trying to make themselves look younger?
There are quite a lot of sideburns in the boardroom these days. It doesn't go much beyond that.
What about the appearance of executives? Now, executives are associated with a rather staid appearance, once defined as the gray flannel suit or identified as a gray flannel suit. Are executives beyond the age of 40 dressing more daringly now?
Some of them may be wearing colored shirts. I don't think that too many of them have switched into mod fashions, though.
So far as you know, it is not necessary for older people to appear young to hang on to their jobs and to hang on to their influence in the big American corporations.
I certainly think that this is not an increasing trend. I don't think that there's more of this than there used to be.
Mr. Rukeyser, is it generally true that it is older people who devise the fads and the fashions that the young take up?
Sure. The young don't have don't own the means of production.
And the market surveys are conducted by older people.
Right, although they try to hire young interviewers.
The 40-plus club has a most exclusive roster. Every member is an executive who earned more than $15,000 a year, is over 40, and is unemployed. The youth syndrome may be beautiful for the affluent. It hurts when you're looking for a job, as Jeffrey Pond of NBC News learned in talking with some members of 40-plus.
Mr. Baker, how serious is the unemployment problem for a man over 40 who's looking for an executive job in this day and age of youth?
Well, I think it's quite serious, at least from my experience so far, and also from discussions I've had with similar executives in my situation. I honestly feel that age is a factor that prohibits one from getting a position after age 40. And although we have legislation, although we have a great many articles written about age discrimination and so forth, I believe this is a myth in industry today.
Why do they do this?
Why? I think that probably the attitudes, the values of our current managements and most corporations is pretty much influenced by the youth movement, by the accent on youth.
Mr. Klee, have you been in this position yourself of trying to look for work?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that happen to a man in our position. Is in the first place, we read the ads in the New York Times on Sunday, and we see 2 to 5, 5 to 10, no more than 10 years experience, young tiger. And so you get pretty desperate, and you answer the ads anyway. And even when a company is identified by the ABC Corporation, you never hear from them, or else you get a very cursory form letter, thank you for your interest, we'll keep you on file, nothing available now. The average ad in the Times, though, has a box number, box X344 or something like that. And you can write to them all day and all night and you don't get a 1% return, even when you are qualified. And I think that's the thing that's got to be broken.
If you have the curious notion that the land of hippies is occupied only by the not quite 22 set, let me dissuade you of that erroneous thought now. In San Francisco, Gene DiCardo of NBC News questioned the philosophy of one hippie who drifts in the flower land long after most men his age do nothing but regret the flight of a thousand yesterdays.
You were in business, you were in the rat race, so to speak, of making a living and part of the establishment. What came across your mind to make you drop away from that?
I became convinced after a while that unless I could get something into my life that had soul and that had depth and that had feeling and that had sensitivity and that had meaning, everybody that I was around was in such a hard, competitive position. They were all wearing shells.
What are the older people in the hippie movement looking for? And on the other side of the coin, what are they able to offer in return?
Well, I think that the older people are looking for something which will enable them to maintain a healthy attitude, a healthy mental attitude. I think every sensible person in life is looking for two things, health and happiness. I think that we're going to get clobbered by the Russians or the Chinese. And I think that the ones that are going to save democracy and save this country is going to be the hippies.
What does the older hippie have to offer to the movement?
Experience, goodwill, balance. These older people are contributing a stability factor to this whole thing. They are making it into a valid lifestyle. I think that the hippie lifestyle is the first stage of an American nomadic lifestyle. I think the hippies are people with good intentions.
Mention such Broadway hits as Hair or Old Calcutta, and most of us swiftly conjure up a world of the theater that belongs, if anything in this era does, only to youth. But Leonard Probst, NBC's critic of the Broadway scene, thinks otherwise.
Broadway may be the last refuge for the middle-aged. The big musical of the year opens this week. It's Coco with Katharine Hepburn, who's now 61, playing the French fashion designer Coco Chanel, who made a comeback in the world of fashion at the age of 71. Earlier this season, Geraldine Page starred in a flop called Angela. She played a 48-year-old woman who falls in love with a TV repairman half her age. The most eagerly awaited comedy of the year is one written by Neil Simon, The Last of the Red Hot Lovers. The lover is a 47-year-old man who operates a seafood restaurant and is married. He decides it's time to have an affair. There are three acts, and he has an affair with a different young woman in each. Movies may be for the young, off-Broadway may be for the young, but Broadway is the home of the middle-aged, middle-income, and middle-brow. The first musical of the season, a poor show, was called Jimmy, and dealt with Jimmy Walker, who was the mayor of New York in the 1920s. It was a show primarily aimed at people in their 40s and 50s. Of the first 11 plays to open on Broadway this season, five were revivals, plays out of the 1930s, shows that people in their middle age could recall with nostalgia. The fact that they're being done now is a sign that Broadway is in transition, stalling for time, not sure of its future. So it's gone back to a better time, a time of the past, a time of meaning not to today's young audiences, but to today's older audiences. Leonard Probst, NBC News.
Is the youth syndrome a preoccupation only of Americans? Or has it invaded other cultures and other lands? Richard Hunt, NBC News in Tokyo, reports.
That's the voice of young Japan, calling out across the generation gap from a psychedelic rock garden in Tokyo. There's no doubt the youngsters are listening and following the style set by the frenzied go-go dancers in their miniskirts and the mop-haired musicians here in the Mugen Club. But most of older Japan, and here a man of 30 may consider himself middle-aged, is not listening and not following. at least not yet. A Japanese gentleman of riper years is likely to be proud of his long life and his gray hairs, and most of them would rather commit harakiri than copy the manners and customs of the college crowd. Still, youth sings a siren song, even in a country where age and dignity continue to command respect. Every night there's a sprinkling of middle-aged businessmen clinging to the bar in the Bugen Club, looking bewildered but determined somehow to turn on if they can. Not long ago, a Japanese lady of a certain maturity complained to her husband that the Ginza, Tokyo's celebrated entertainment district, had been taken over by the young. There's no place left for older couples to go, she said. Nevertheless, the same lady and many of her friends are discreetly turning up the hems of their skirts to a modified mini length. And perhaps they, too, will be dancing go-go before long. Richard Hunt, NBC News, Tokyo.
On the opposite side of the world, Ray Shearer, NBC's London expert, reports on the British scene.
Anyone who embarks on a random walking tour through this beguiling city of London is struck by the gaudy forest of advertising posters importuning him to stay young and trim. Health clubs have sprung up all over Mayfair. The Finns have brought in sauna parlors. The escalators leading down into the London tube system are blanketed with billboards proclaiming wig emporiums and hair weavers. There are half a dozen fat farms within 25 miles of London, none perhaps so cushy as Arizona's main chance, but all guaranteed to combat the unfairness of being old and fat. There are drugs around that claim to extend youth, possibly the most famous, Procaine, sold as capsule called KH3. These are supposed to remove wrinkles from the skin, cause the hair to grow more thickly and recover its color. The rub is the capsules, widely brought into Britain from the continent, do not work on everyone. But having noted these English outcroppings of the stay young urge, it does not appear that the syndrome is so deeply embedded in the British character as it is in the American. The British are more relaxed about it, and feel that there are real as well as social advantages in physical ripeness. Women, not all of course, but many on this side of the Atlantic, are considered more interesting after 40 and positively beautiful after 60. Ray Shearer, NBC News, London.
It would appear that the world of the mature, like the world of youth, is bright and fun and largely a go-go place where each is entitled, regardless of time's corroding effect, to do his own thing. But a sober note was injected by Dr. Joyce Brothers.
As anyone who spent even the briefest time in this country can observe, we are a youth-worshipping culture. Perhaps it had its start in our pioneer days, when only the young, the strong, the vigorous could survive and make our country thrive. But now we've carried the youth cult to some ridiculous extremes. The other day I was visiting the home of an attractive but somewhat bizarrely made-up woman in her late 50s. After dinner, I retired to her vanity table to freshen my own lipstick. But the light in her dressing room was so bad that I despaired of doing an accurate job. While I was squinting dourly at my reflection, she happened to pass by. She apologized for the poor lighting, but explained she couldn't offer me any better because she wouldn't dare contemplate what she really looked like. I found her attitude very interesting, if a little pathetic, and have since discussed it with several other psychologists. They all knew a number of middle-aged women who had worked out elaborate systems for deceiving themselves about their appearance, which is a shame when you consider how easy it is for a woman in her 50s to look beautiful if she has the courage to apply a dash of realistic strategy to the campaign. Our concept of how old we are changes with our age level. A teenage boy thinks his mother is old. She's under 40 and thinks she's young. People think of their own age in strange ways. In a study by Alfred Farina, it was found that young people do have a tendency to think of themselves as older than they really are, and people over 40 tend to think of themselves as younger than they are. It's the group between the ages of 20 and 40 that have the best sense of age. It is this age, too, that is most envied by the majority of people, both young and old alike. People over 40 can have retired and have financial security for the first time in their lives, but still they think back and wish.
Mm-hmm. The concept that you can be young twice may be a wispy dream which vanishes when the insistent alarm clock of age rings and can't be shut off. Perhaps, on the other hand, there is no place for growing old in our culture, for old age obviously is a forgotten phrase and middle age has ceased to exist. Or it could be that we have discovered not the elixir of staying young forever, but the more exciting elixir of staying young in heart all the years of our lives. I might add, and it was not planned this way, that on our entire second Sunday tonight, from newsmen to guests and the complete production staff, only one person involved was under 35. Sadly, not me. Ave Tempus Tyranni, baby. This is Murray the K for NBC News.
You've been listening to Second Sunday, You're Only Young Twice, The Youth Syndrome. Tonight's program was written and produced by Herbert Gordon, directed by Don Washington, technical supervisor Warren Hogan, production coordinator Linda Farah. Second Sunday is produced under the direction and control of NBC News. Your announcer is Jerry Damon.